Sai Ram and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories.
In this series, we bring you conversations with former students of Bhagwan's schools and colleges.
Today, we bring you the second and final part of our conversation with Mrs. Lata Ramesh.
In conversation with her is Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi and it was recorded on 2nd April 2014.
There was one more learning I had when I was in college. Once I remember all the classmates had gathered in the ground and we were busy criticizing and complaining about the system, about teachers, about this and what this is not happening. And for almost the whole, 45 minutes to an hour, we kept criticizing and complaining. And towards the end of that time, one of my classmates, suddenly she came in the middle, she stood in the middle and she said, "Girls, what are we doing? We are criticizing and do you think that Swami is not here? Swami is not listening?" And immediately it struck me that what she's saying is so true. And while we may have a lot of reasons for us thinking that, yeah, we have the right to complain and criticize, but Swami doesn't like it. And that is the truth. And so we immediately dispersed. And this learning I carried with me, ever since then. And now I think twice before criticizing or complaining. And this is a valuable lesson. And I mean, my whole Anantapur days were filled with so many. It was not just about experiencing Swami, feeling Swami's presence. It was this inner transformation which had got activated.
And, education, the degree was incidental. In my case too, I have no idea when I studied and got my degrees. I have no clue. But tell me one thing. When you say that you learned to not criticize and not to complain, what do you do now when you're unhappy with the situation and you don't see it being perfect? If you find a situation which is disturbing and not the way you think it should be, how do you process that? How do you deal with it? You may not articulate your complaint or your criticism, but are you not processing it internally without speaking it out in your mind?
Yeah. I got a solution to this also when I was in Anantapur. In one of the discourses, Swami said that He told us to welcome problems. And at that moment of time, I kept introspecting about it and thinking that why is Swami saying welcome problems? Even he can say accept problems, he can say tolerate problems, or he can say deal with them. Yeah. Why did he say welcome? And for many, many years, I would keep thinking about it. Till finally one day, it just came automatically because problems are blessings. That is what Swami is trying to say. And when we welcome problems, we are able to see the blessing hidden within the problem. But as long as we are just accepting or tolerating problems, we are just fighting with it. But then the moment we start welcoming them, and we realize that this is, like Swami says, everything is for the good. He says in Balvikas, we teach the children, see only the good, see only the good. And there is goodness in every situation, in every problem. And I'm not saying I've been able to practice it a lot, but I just try and be aware of it every time I have a stressful situation. And I keep telling myself that this is Swami's blessing. And if this is a blessing, let me become like a detective and try and unearth what is the goodness hidden underneath. And invariably, most of the time, like for example, when I had my back surgery and I could not see Swami on close quarters, and many a time I was not able to, sit on the floor and touch Swami's feet like many of my alumni friends, I would feel quite bad. And then I kept thinking that, like one Shivratri, when Swami was taking out the linga, I was there in 1999 or 98, I'm not sure. And from far, I was sitting in the bench, God gave us permission to stand up on the bench, all the old ladies and me. And we all stood there and we could see Swami so clearly.
And you're so tall, that would have really helped.
Yes.
The tallest old lady.
yeah. And things like that. And I could see, and moreover, after this back episode, it becomes easier for me to relate to Swami's omnipresence. And to not worry so much about Swami's physical form. I think that was one of the blessings that I got from it. So
let's talk more about your practice of His presence or omnipresence in your life.
It started way back in my school days. and I had to go to school alone. I must have been in my third or fourth standard in Mumbai, and I had to cross a lot of places where there were some wine shops and places where there were a lot of hooligans or gundas just standing and smoking in the road and all that, and it used to trouble me and disturb me, and I looked much above my age at that time. And then, I don't know how it started, but I started imagining that I'm holding Swami's hand. I used to clasp my hand like this and walk. All I needed to do, just clasp my hand like this, and I would feel that Swami is there with me. And then I would chant the Gayatri Mantra and keep chanting Gayatri. My mother kept telling me that that's the most powerful security. It's like a bulletproof armor.
It is.
It is. And you'll be completely protected. And I would just do that. And slowly over the days, and it just made me fearless. And every time there was fear, there was some kind of anxiety, I would just clasp my hand and I would visualize Swami there.
It's a very nice practice.
Yeah. And then when I was in my sixth grade, again, it was a beautiful personal experience where I consciously prayed to Swami and He answered my prayer. So I had done very badly in my math exam. And I done so miserably that I despaired of even getting 4 or 5 marks. And I think the minimum passing was some 13. And I came back, when I was walking back home, I was all crying and I was praying to Swami. And I stopped by at a nearby temple. Any temple I go into, I keep praying only to Swami. So I prayed to Swami. I said, Swami, I know I've not studied well. And I've done miserably, but I've never failed in any subject so far. And my parents would be terribly disappointed if I did failed here. So please ensure that I pass. And I promise you that henceforward, I will put more effort in my studies. And this was a pact between. And I came back home. I told my mother. She said, don't worry. Swami will take care. And when the results were announced, I got 14 marks.
Ooh.
And to this day, I don't know, because most of my questions were unanswered. I don't know how I got this.
He even gave you a bonus mark, eh?
Yes, yes.
13 plus 1.
Yes, he did. And then I remember in 1983, we came as a big Balvikas group to Puttaparthi. There was a India-wide Balvikas rally in 1983. And we were a huge group who had come from Mumbai and Maharashtra. And all the children, parents, gurus were made to stay in. Huge tents were erected for that. That day evening, there was a big storm and a lot of winds. And it started raining. There was a power cut. And the tent started moving, swaying. And the wooden pole, which was holding the tent upright, that all started moving, you know. And we were scared. We were right inside the tent that the tent would fall on top of our heads. But our Balvikas gurus were very encouraging and very positive. They made us all stand in groups of 10 and each of us hold one pole and start chanting Om Shri Sai Ram. So for 45 minutes to an hour in the darkness, all of us just held on to that pole and kept chanting Om Shri Sai Ram, Om Shri Sai Ram. I'm sure so many of my Balvikas friends who were there.
And there was a major cyclone in coastal India when this episode happened.
Yes.
So the gusty winds were an outcome of that cyclone.
Yes, yes. And then, of course, after that, we were shifted to more concrete sheds and all that. But the next day, Swami, in the discourse, He praised us a lot. And He said that these are my Balvikas children. And they have so much of faith and so much of devotion. And I felt very happy. And that was something that I try and pass on to my children and tell them that don't undermine the importance of the simple words Om Shri Sai Ram and the Gayatri Mantra, and have the faith and devotion that Swami will steer clear of any troubles at all times. Didi, there's one more incident. All this time, my faith and devotion to Swami had been steadily increasing. But there was one marked incident in my life when He completely captured my heart. And that was in my ninth grade. I was a teenager, 14 years old, and I had accompanied my mother. She had come for Sivadal duty from Maharashtra. And I just accompanied her. It was my summer holidays. And we had come for darshan. And, you know, in those days in the sands, we used to run to get the first token line. You know, whatever. We used to be so excited about it. And I would write Om Shri Sai Ram in the book and all that. And one of the days, I was sitting in the third row from the front, and Swami came near the person sitting in the front, and He created Vibhuti. And instinctively, I knelt and offered my kerchief to Swami. And there were many others who were seated right in the front, in the second row, who also offered kerchiefs. But what Swami did was, He looked at me intensely into my eyes, and He bent down and took my kerchief, wiped His hand, and threw it back to me. And He continued His darshan. It was only when He started moving, I realized that the kerchief that I had offered Swami was not a new one. It was the used one which I had been using the whole day. And I realized that Swami chose to bless my kerchief, where there were so many, another 5 or 6 kerchiefs offered to him right from the front. And that was when I was so touched by his unconditional love for this simple, ordinary teenager. He just took over my life.
Mm. Such a tender moment, isn't it?
Yes.
You have to treasure it forever.
Yes.
So Lata, today you are a mother of 2 teenagers and you're a very busy, multitasking woman. You do so many things. You're involved in the samiti work. How do you practice his presence and how do you navigate through so many different challenges in your life? There's a lot of constraint on your time that I'm aware of because you have constantly deadlines to meet. And I do realize that when we work for our Sai centers, it's like a full-time job.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
How do you juggle it all?
I think chanting Swami's name, chanting the Gayatri Mantra, and like I said, he had prepared me in Anantapur with that duty consciousness. And I had always been aware of the importance of holding on to him within. And as I practiced that, I think it became a little easier for me to manage. There were a lot of challenges. Like I remember when I graduated from Anantapur, I joined my postgraduate in Mumbai. I was the only girl wearing sari to college in Mumbai. And my classmates would look down upon me and say, this girl has come from some village in Andhra Pradesh, and, you know. And the first time the tests happened in my class, the professor just handed over the question papers and he just walked out of the class. And my classmates also started, you know, opening their books and just copying. And then I asked him, what is happening? He said, this is common. It is a given. But I told myself, this is not what I would want to do. And I went and sat alone in a bench and sat without copying myself or, you know, letting somebody else copy from me. And slowly I started earning respect because of that. And I realized that when we practice values, of course, we don't need to do that because we will earn respect, but it automatically comes to us. Swami does all the work and he lets us take all the credit. And many instances, like I remember when I was listening to Radio Sai some time back and you had an episode about the Gayatri Mantra, I recollected some beautiful experiences of my own. When I was a teenager, I was studying my 12th grade. My mother asked me to take tuitions in the slums. And I would finish college at 6 o'clock in the evening and then go to the slum. Directly from there, I would be all tired. And the entry point to the slum, there was a narrow alley and it was quite dark and a lot of antisocial elements sitting there. And I would just chant the Gayatri Mantra, and for a whole year, while coming back, it would be 8:30 in the night, the whole year, I would just hold on to the Gayatri Mantra, chanting it while going and while coming, and I was completely fearless. It was not that anything didn't happen to me. It just made me so fearless.
It gives you that confidence. As you said, it's like a bulletproof vest you're wearing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's invisible to the outer world.
Yeah.
And when you know that you're wearing a bulletproof vest, you're not going to be worried about somebody shooting at you.
Yes, yes.
It gives you a very strong inner confidence.
Yeah, yeah. And last year, I had a major fall in Bangalore. I hurt my lips and I needed more than 25 sutures on my lips.
Ooh.
They just rushed me to the nearest hospital. And while those doctors were putting the sutures, I was awake and aware. Though they had given me a local anesthesia, I could still feel a little bit of pain. But the constant chanting of Gayatri Mantra for the whole hour while they were doing the sutures not only helped me not feel the pain, not feel anxiety and be fearless at that point of time, it also helped the doctors, I realized later, to do the stitching in such perfect order. Now, whenever whichever doctor I show to, they say they have done such a beautiful job. And it was a very small hospital, very ordinary doctors there. I mean, it is...
Because Gayatri impacts the entire environment around you, not only you, but everybody else around you.
Yes.
So I think your chanting guided the doctors in their work also.
Yes, yes. And I've taught this Gayatri right from the beginning to my children too. And when they had to be taken for vaccinations, and we made them chant. And even now, it's very comical sometimes when the needle goes in, they start, they keep going on. And they themselves say when we chant, we feel less pain.
Yes.
It's really amazing. Yeah. There's one more incident, Didi, I would like to share. This is when my daughter was born. I was 5 months pregnant with her and I wanted a girl. And one day when I was doing my prayers, I was praying to Swami about it and I could hear Swami's voice very clearly saying that it will be a girl. And then he told me, you name her Ananta. And he explained the meaning. He said, Ananta means one who lives forever. And then after my prayers, when I opened my eyes, I thought maybe it's just my mind playing tricks. And, you know, sometimes you imagine, over-imagine, and you're wishing so badly to have a girl, and maybe that is why it's all happening. But the moment I opened my eyes, there was a nectar amritam flowing from Swami's photo. Just at that moment, it was just still wet and flowing. And then I realized that this is Swami, and this is what he wanted me to name her. But then I was thinking what kind of name it is. I would have gone for a more fancier name. And finally, when she was born, the whole mystery, opened up. She was 6-day-old baby when she was diagnosed with a condition called septicemia. It's an infection of the blood. And it became very serious. She had to be hospitalized, and all kind of tubes were inserted into the small baby, right in her veins and her nose and mouth. And it was very painful. And she was right inside the ward, and the doctors were working on her, and I was crying outside, sitting the whole day, that's what was happening. And 2-3 days, the doctors tried putting in antibiotics into her, and they even gave her a blood transfusion, but she was not responding to any of those medicines, and slowly her condition was deteriorating. And then the 3rd day, my mother, who was also there with me, she said, enough is enough. Now we will not just keep quiet. Swami, you have to help this girl. You have to help this baby. And she literally, told Swami, you have to do it. And she took a lot of vibhuti and started massaging this baby. And the nurses who were there, they said, don't be careful. All the tubes are there. She said, no, I'm just going to do that. And she spent the next 30 minutes massaging the baby with vibhuti and chanting Gayatri Mantra and saying Om Shri Sairam. And within 2 hours, she started responding to the medicines. And when the doctors came for the evening rounds, there was a smile on their face and they realized that this girl is becoming better. And within the next 2 days, she was discharged and she never had any of those symptoms and any of those problems again. And it was then I realized, we have so many different interpretations of the meaning of the word Ananta. But Swami said, one who lives forever, meaning that I will make her live. I will take care of her. I will give her a new life. And that was what he did.
And you have a beautiful daughter named Ananta.
She's studying here in Swami's school.
Wonderful. Lata, you have extensive experience as a Bal Vikas Guru. You've taught all groups at all levels. How did you experience Swami's presence there? And how did you bring what you have learned at his lotus feet into that experience as a Guru?
Being a Bal Vikas Guru was a beautiful learning experience for me. Initially, I started thinking that I have so many things to share for the children and children are going to learn. But then over the years, I've realized that it is me as a guru who's doing the learning. We are learning constantly as we are teaching. There's one beautiful experience I would like to share there. Just a couple of years back, I was taking the 3rd group Bal Vikas, Pre-Sevadal, that's what it's called in India. We were teaching Bhagavad Gita shlokas to the children, and I was preparing for a particular shloka. It goes like, Udhare dat manatmanam, natmanam avasadayet, atmeva yatmano bandhur, atmeva ripuratmanaha. And the meaning of the shloka is that man can elevate himself on his own. He can push himself down on his own. And he is his own friend and he is his own enemy. And while I was preparing for the shloka that day, something had happened and I was very upset and very depressed myself. But, being the duty conscious that I have become, I decided I have to go for this class and take this class. But while I was preparing for the shloka, I came across a beautiful story. And it was a very beautiful, touching story. Story goes like this, that there's an old woman who lost her husband and her son in a series of tragic accidents. And she became very, very depressed after that. And so depressed that she literally house arrested herself. And she wouldn't go out anywhere. She would hardly eat. And for many months, she was in a state of that depression. Till one day, one of the windows of her room was open and a bird, which was slightly injured, had hopped into the room. And seeing the bird, her natural maternal instinct arose and she wanted to help the bird. Take out the thorn or whatever it was, its feet was injured. But this bird, what it did, it went under the cot. And when it went under the cot, she kept trying to, bend down and search for it. And it was very dark under the cot and she could hardly see it. And then she just spoke to the bird very sweetly. She said, what are you doing there underneath, hidden in the darkness? How can I help you if you don't come out? These were the words that she spoke to the bird. But when she spoke to the bird, she realized that this was her higher consciousness speaking to her. And it is the same thing for her. As long as she locks herself in the house and refuses to come out and refuses to make an attempt to come out of the depression, how can God help her? And so she started, you know, becoming better. And I was preparing the story for this shloka and I realized that as I was preparing and as I was reading that story, my depression lifted. My mood became elevated. And I started sharing the story with the children in the class and I felt so happy after that. And I realized it is in our hands. We have the choice to be happy or to be sad. We have the choice to raise ourselves up or put ourselves down.
And we have the choice to be our best friend or our worst enemy.
Yes.
And I've always found that teaching children actually benefits me the most because
yes.
You can't tell children anything till you believe in it.
Absolutely.
And you can be the best, most eloquent teacher. It won't have the same impact unless you mean the words you utter.
Absolutely.
So Balvika serves the guru more than the children.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's why sometimes even if there are one or two children in the class, I still want to continue the class. I still want to take the class because finally it's me who's benefiting and I don't want to miss that benefit.
And who knows that one child in your class could be a future Vivekananda or a Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.
Yeah.
So you can't take that chance. You can't leave one child behind also.
Yes, yes. And as I kept teaching the children, I realized like we would tell them about Swami's sayings, help ever, hurt never, love all, serve all, start early, drive slowly, read safely, be good, do good, see good. This is the way to God. And all those simple words. Swami's words are so simple and so profound. And then I realized that Swami is not just this form. He is his words. He is in the countless discourses that he has spoken. He is the act of selfless service that he has been doing all his life. And it's still happening today. He is in that love which is in that innocent children who are fondly looking up to me and saying, yes, auntie, Sai Ram auntie. He is there in each one of us and that was the blessing that I got from Balvikas. And I always tell my children that Swami is there, still there, even now, in each one of us.
Lata, today, the reality is quite altered. The Mahasamadhi has happened. Why is Bhagwan's presence still so important in your life? And how do you go about continuing to practice his presence in everything that you do?
When I was a school-going child, I used to proudly go and ask my classmates, have you seen God? Have you seen God? You know? And they would say, yeah, every Sunday we see. Every day we go to the temple, we see God. I said, no, not that God in the temple, in the statue, but the real living God who walks around us and who speaks to us and whom we can touch. They said, no. Who can see that? I said, no, I have seen and very proudly I used to. And that is a feeling I still carry with me even today. I mean, just the fact that we have been there at the time of the avatar and we have seen his living presence and we are continuing to experience his omnipresence is the greatest gift. And I always tell my mother that this is the greatest gift of inheritance that my parents have given us. This gift of introducing us to Swami, of showing us what God is. And I try to do the same thing for my children. And finally, if they hold on to Swami and Swami continues in their lives or not, that is left between Swami and them. But as a mother, as a parent, it is my job to introduce them to Swami because it is the most valuable gift. It's the most valuable blessing. Don't we go around telling people when there's a 50% discount sale in Shoppers Stop or Lifestyle and we go about telling, you know, we got such beautiful things. But then this is the most priceless blessing that we have. Why are we keeping quiet about it? And why are we hesitating to introduce our children to it and ensuring that they are able to feel Swami's love and holding on to Swami's support at all points of time? That's the greatest gift. I mean, there's no sense in leaving them wealth and possessions and other things. More important to leave them this gift.
And I think it's also the best insurance policy we can buy for our children.
Yes.
Insurance against calamities, disasters, disappointments, heartbreaks,
yes.
So-called failure in life.
Yes.
So that they have something so solid to fall back upon. And as a parent, I think that's the most valuable gift one can give the children.
Yes, yes. That is the most valuable thing. And I remember Jemma ma'am used to tell us when we were in college, especially when we were leaving Anantapur, she said that, don't worry that you're leaving Anantapur and Prashanti Nilayam. You can carry Prashanti Nilayam wherever you go. Carry it with you. And I would wonder, what does she mean by carrying it? But as a mother, later on I realized that it is up to us whether we are able to create that environment of Prashanti Nilayam in our homes, in our workplace, in our surroundings and around ourselves. It is up to us and we can do that. And I try to do that. You know, we go for Veda classes, we go for bhajans, my children go for Balvikas. And slowly, and we listen to Radio Sai every day morning live.
Very good practice, may I say. Very good for the health of the whole family.
No, just listening to the Om and the Rudram chanting, it immediately elevates whatever mood we are in.
And the house feels like Prashanti. There are many times I listen to the live from Mandir at home, especially when I'm off, away from work these days most of the time. The moment I switch on and the Omkar comes on, I'm just transported to Sai Kulwant Hall, and that's also what most of our listeners report back to us.
Yes.
What a blessing Swami has given us in the form of Radio Sai, really.
Yes. It is, I must really thank you guys so much,
No, we must all thank Swami for it. It's His grace and Professor Venkatraman's hard work that such a thing has come to fruition, that people have access to daily live from the Mandir twice a day.
Yes, it is. And one more thing that I feel it's important to do when we are practicing Swami's presence in our lives is to stay being positive. And in this world where there's so much of negativity all around, and while practicing Swami's teachings or doing Swami's work or doing our own personal sadhana, we have to really work extra hard at being positive at all times. And the times when I am not positive, I am very negative, I really miss the lesson that is hidden within a circumstance or a problem or within people, you know, difficult people, whatever. There's difficulties all around us, negativity all around us, and hidden under those storm clouds is those beautiful rainbows. And we miss all that if we are not positive. And I feel it's really very important. We have to work at it. It's not easy, but it needs to be done.
So Lata, clearly your life is saturated by Swami and His teachings. If I simply asked you a question, who is Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba for you? What would you say?
When Swami corrects and guides me, He is my guru and guide. When He nurtures, nourishes, admonishes and disciplines, He is my divine mother and father. When He teaches me, He molds me. When He transforms me, He is my divine teacher. When He supports, He motivates and He encourages and lends a shoulder to rest on, He is my divine friend. When He energizes and He heals me, He's a divine physician and healer. And at all times, He's my God, someone who loves me absolutely, unconditionally. He's my life, my reason for existence.
Very beautifully said. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for helping me relive and recount all those beautiful blessings that I've experienced in my life.
And I'm sure our listeners will enjoy listening to it as well and find a lot of answers and a great deal of inspiration. Thank you very much, Lata.
Thank you so much.
Sai Ram. Sai Ram, dear listeners, you just heard the second and final part of our Fleeting Moments conversation with Mrs. Lata Ramesh,
an alumna of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Anantpur Campus. In conversation with her was Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. And it was recorded on 2nd April 2014.
This was yet another episode of our series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories.
We hope you enjoyed it. The audio engineers for this program were Sunil and Abhishek.
Your feedback, suggestions and comments are very welcome at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you for your company and please do continue to stay tuned to our next program. Sai Ram.